What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Source from the Sofa. It's me, Rome. We got Jason and Aaron. We're going to recap the NFL week 8. It was a hell of a week for against the spread contest. Not a great week for me. I got the shittiest record. Jason got one better. If you caught our picks and predictions, we had identical picks aside from one game, and that was the difference. Aaron, not much better, but did come away with the 500 record at 6-6, but that's one week I want to toss away so badly. We're recording Monday night, just right before 8:30. And Commanders Chiefs, we all had the Commanders with the plus 12.5. A lot of books today had it at 11 or so. And it was just not a great game. So I really don't have much to say about it, unless you guys want to give your like little 2 cents on the Monday Night Showdown. All right.
I got 0 cents for you.
I will say this, the Commanders get a healthy quick, Jaden Daniels.
And they mailed that game in, I feel like.
Kind of a weird game, man. I mean, the first half, really a lot of energy.
Yeah,
and second half, complete opposite.
I just don't get it.
I mean, I wonder if the inside. I wonder if the inside information was bet Commanders first half and Chiefs second half. It sounds like I didn't get that inside info from whoever's releasing it.
Dude, even Mariota looked pretty good, at least in the first half. I was like, okay, moving around, scrambling, getting out of the pocket. Unfortunately, he led the team in carries and rushing yardage. That's not good. Never want your 30-something-year-old quarterback to do that. Pat, mixed bag, couple interceptions, but does get 3 TDs, almost 300 yards. I guess that just kind of like lines it up for the Kansas City Chiefs to face the Bills next week. They got some big games upcoming that should make a pretty big impact in power rankings and playoff positioning and all that good stuff. But Commanders, I was expecting something totally different. And yeah.
I think you touched on it. Maybe 2 weeks ago or last week, Rome, like that. We touched on it. Remember that Commanders-Bills game? Whoever loses it, their season just seems to go south. And Commanders lost that one, so maybe their season's going to end up a lot like the Bears did last year, just going south where they just don't do anything right for a while.
It's just so weird, man, because they go to Chargers, right? They go to SoFi and shock everyone. They look really good in there, lose a tough one against to the Falcons, beat the shit out of the Raiders. Lose a tough one to the Bears. They got beat by the Cowboys, though. That was not good. Maybe this is the team. Maybe this is the team.
I mean, Aaron might have called it there. If you did the flip in the Bears game,
yeah,
a year ago, the Bears lost 10 straight after they had that loss to the Commanders. The Commanders have lost two more since that
it's
loss
two
to the
straight
Bears.
Since then, so. Yeah.
And the funny thing is the Bears had the game last year won. Commanders had it won this year. If Jaden Daniels, the ball doesn't slip out of his hands, the likelihood is the Commanders go on to win that game.
Yeah, dude. Three straight losses for the Commanders. They drop to, I don't have the record on me.
Three and five.
Let's get into the rest of the week, though, as the Dodgers and Blue Jays game is in the background, stressing me the fuck out.
It's going to be a very distracted recording, as like one of us is talking and the two others are just like staring off in the distance watching this game right now.
Well, I'm having like a slight panic attack right now. Like, I don't think
it's
the coffee.
Game 3, Rome. It's only game 3.
Nah, man. It's all these games matter. And the Toronto, they're just hitting really well right now.
Toronto gets the bats, man. We talked about the last series.
Bats.
We didn't really even get to talk about, I mean, game Otani's. One at all. That inning was wild.
It was wild, but I'm glad it was a blowout because, you know, it's tougher losing a close one like this one. It's going to have like a scar the first one. I was like, oh, okay, well, at least we got blown out. We can kind of reset. And they responded wonderfully with that complete game. But all right, so let's go back to the NFL. Week 8, we had a blowout win from the Chargers this was the day before, so we already kind of talked about this game. And then we had quite a few upsets. I was feeling pretty good about our picks, Jason, and you kind of edged a few games like the way I would. There's a few changes when I talked to you briefly on the phone earlier, Aaron. there was two games I would have switched based on like that day of. But other than that, though, it was just not a good day. Giants, that's a big loss. Right when Scatterby went out, that whole thing changed. And that non-fumble that was a fumble on the tush push, that bullshit, like they're just not going to ever call it correctly. Like now you got even Rich Eisen saying that they just got to get rid of the play because no one can ever call it. That was a fumble. That and the Scatterby injury totally changed the trajectory of that game because the Giants were playing good in that game and that would have definitely covered. So kind of pissed off on that. That got you the difference of the win, Jason. Was that game?
So, I mean, does it matter? I mean, you're throwing this week away for how bad it was overall.
It was very bad. Also, the Falcons. Remember, I was talking about, like, you know, like, I just want to take the Dolphins with the points on this one. More information was released day of. Certain guys were going to be playing, and Dolphins came out. That was one I wish I could take back. Jets blew our minds, right? You know, we're like, it was bound to happen, and they lit a really good on-fire Bengals team with the revived 40-year-old quarterback. Texans kind of manhandled the 49ers. Wasn't really that close.
The Niners one is one I would have had back, Romo said. Just going into it, how the Niners were. I may be a little biased against the Texans at this point, just not confident that they can protect C.J. Stroud. But this was a game that the Niners were just so banged up. It felt like a game. I mean, I had friends that were Niners fans that said, hey, this was an easy Texas win. I wouldn't switch that Jets one, though. Fourth quarter. You know, that was maybe the Bengals defense we all kind of knew going into the season where Burrow was going to have to bail them out. But a 23-point fourth quarter for the Jets overall, like I at halftime, I was like, all right, that was an easy call. This Jets,
I actually marked
awful.
It as a W and I had to mark it off.
I'll be honest, Roman. I pulled this up right now. I knew the Jets won, but I looked at it again. I'm like, oh, the Jets won? I just still was associating it. The Bengals won that game.
Yeah. What else weird happened? I think that's about it, really. Everything else was just kind of like, you know, ballsy calls that we just didn't get. Biggest win or biggest loss of the week? Should we break it down like that?
Sure.
Aaron, you get the pick.
Yeah, you might as well start with the biggest win.
All right, let's why don't you nominate a couple teams with the biggest win?
I'll start with maybe the Ravens. I mean, they were 1-5. Every other team in that division lost. I mean, Bengals, Jason just touched on. I mean, I thought they had the game, a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter. I think that was either the largest or second largest comeback for the Jets being down in the fourth quarter in their franchise history. So you get the Bengals, the Steelers, both losing at home. The Browns, they're not very good. And then you get the Ravens, who, you know, schedule lines up, you know, nicely, maybe getting some bodies back. Lamar's supposed to be back Thursday. That's a big win for them. Because, you know, we touched on it. I think 8-9, 9-8 maybe wins that division and gets you in a playoff and you're hosting a playoff game.
People were not happy with how they were handling the injury report, especially with Lamar Jackson. He was practicing, had a full practice on Friday, even had one on Saturday. And then all of a sudden, when we were recording Friday, when we were talking about the games, like, wait a minute, Tyler Huntley, like, he knows this offense. Like, that might be a good pickup. Had a pretty good game. Nothing crazy, like no crazy stats, but did well. Used his legs, had some really tight throws, and Derrick Henry, kind of like a little flashback, had a couple touchdowns. Not too many yardage, but they used him pretty well and efficiently. And then the Bears' offense just looked a little shaky at times, so from what I saw.
Yeah, I mean, that was a game I was locked into, obviously, the entire morning slate. The Bears just totally are not getting anything done within the 5-yard line. They kicked field goals for the first two drives. They were going right down the field, stalled. They ended up just 6-0 in the first quarter where they should have scored touchdowns and been up 14-0. We're going to change the trajectory of the game. But after that, offensively, after the first quarter, they really had nothing. Like, the offense went nowhere. The defense for the Ravens really kind of tightened up the running game because they started getting the Swift and Kyle Manungai going in the first quarter. That's what was opening things up for Caleb for some nice passes to Adunze and some other guys. But overall, the Bears defense continues to be a weaker part of this team where, you know, they give up a lot of yards. I think in the broadcast they said the Bears may give up the most like yards per play in the league, but they have, you know, some of the most turnovers, which gave you that 4-game winning streak. And do we get something on him or is it a home run? I don't know. Your face is thrown.
No, it should have been a fucking strike. It should have been a fucking strike and they called it a ball.
Gotcha. All right, cool. So interrupt this for your Dodgers in game right now. But
not fucking happy.
But yeah, I mean, the Bears just didn't get the turnover in that game. I think what you speak of Huntley so much in that was he didn't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And they were able to, he was able to make some big plays. And when the Bears aren't getting turnovers, this is kind of the end result where you look at their 4-game winning streak. They may have given up. They were the bend but no break defense, but they were getting turnovers that put us in the position to win. So yeah, I think Aaron's right. I think it's a big win for the Ravens because it keeps them alive at 2-5. Bad loss by the Bengals. You know, the Steelers seemingly could have, you know, started to put things away a little bit, but at 4-3, you know, you got a lot of interdivision games. You're gonna be playing the Browns a little bit, you know. Yeah, that they're still like
Steelers,
they're still like
Steelers are such like fool's gold, and a bit, like now that's like what, like 4 or 5 seasons in a row, you just start hot and then this is actually a little premature that they start the little downfall. You usually do this in end of November, early December, but I'd rather them just rip it. You know, rip all the faith and positivity right now. So I know not to root for them. We'll talk about the Steelers game later. I'm not ready for that. But big game though. You're right, Aaron. That's their favorite to win the division now. Ravens. I think they're like -170 something on a lot of books.
Even going in the game this last weekend, I think they were still like +200 odds. So you don't see a team 1-5 ever +200. Usually they're already plus 1500 or something. So yeah, Ravens, we know they were banged up. I mean, Jason had touched on it, but the Bears secondary, a lot of injuries on defense. They just couldn't compete as that game wore on, and their offense did not do enough early to gain the advantage with the lead. So big win for the Ravens. Yeah, no turnovers. Their defense, maybe they start figuring out. I mean, this is a Baltimore team last year that was ranked, what, 25th, 29th pass defense the first 12 weeks. The last six of the season, they were ranked in the top five. That led them to the second round, divisional round of the playoffs. So we'll see. I mean, Baltimore, they're a scary team. If they get hot and get in, you don't want to play them, especially if they get healthy.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to say a personal fuck you to the Browns for trading Flacco to the Bengals. And, you know, at the very least, the Steelers should be 5-2 right now, at the very least. So this division's up for grabs. Another big victory. Jason, you want to nominate one?
Yeah. I mean, I think there was two, and they were, you know, pretty big favorites in it. Rums can just super excited. Threw him out a third.
Yeah, he did.
That was a nice throw, dude. That was a nice throw. Vladdy had a nice throw early in the game and got Tiasco trying to steal. I didn't know he can throw like that, Vladdy Jr.
We interrupt you for this Dodger Blue Jays World Series update mid-game. I think there's a couple big wins this weekend against maybe some overly favored. The Bills, again, haven't really played any of the big teams, and they've had, you know, a couple questionable losses. The Panthers, you know, not we considered a great team in the beginning of the season, but hey, we're 3-0 at home, 4-3 overall. The Bills looked, you know, pretty bad on the road and weren't really closing the deal against some bad teams. And they really made a statement, I think, putting away a team that they should beat handily. So I think that was impressive. I think the other one was the Eagles. I think a lot of questions when it came to the Eagles, you know, on paper, talent-wise, best team in the NFC, but they're just trying to push their way to victory. But, you know, they've gotten some things going in the past game, but then Saquon really has kind of hit his stride a little bit. 14 carries for 150 yards in that game.
Finally broke out. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was probably a telling thing for the Eagles, as, you know, they can start, you know, they can start taking control of that division and start going away with, you know, the Commanders falling off right now, the Cowboys with another loss, the Giants, you know, losing Scadaboo and them, and, you know, them putting them down. So
tough,
I think that
loss,
was a pretty
man.
Big win for them. Yep.
Tough loss by the Giants, man. I feel really bad losing all their young talent.
I would say the other one, Rome, I know you only took me pick one. I think the Broncos too, because you start looking at this Broncos team right now in a super competitive AFC West. We called this probably, you know, second best division in football at the start of the year behind the NFC North, because, you know, they're going to have three top teams, and it's delivering right now with the Broncos at 6-2. You know, you have the Chiefs now at 5-3. You got the Chargers sitting at 5-3. And so super competitive. And now you get, you get the offense is really starting to click here. I know it's not the greatest defense in the Cowboys, but you saw a lot of different players in that game making plays offensively, you know, for the Broncos. What you had Franklin have two touchdowns in that game. They had the rookie RJ Harvey got involved. I think Pat Bryant, there was just a lot. There was a lot of different things offensively. Bo Nix seemingly kind of finding his stride a little bit the last couple weeks. And, you know, they're going to play at the Texans, who they should beat. They're going to play the Raiders twice in the next like 5 weeks, and the Jags and the other team. So, I mean, the Broncos hitting their stride, got a lot of winnable games down the stretch, still two games against the Chiefs and another against the Chargers for a revenge game at Mile High. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty big win. I think the only thing about that one is Sertan's going to be out a couple weeks. And so now the offense really needs to start clicking, because you're going to have losing some pieces on the defense.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty big win, especially for stopping that high octane Cowboys offense. You know, they held them to 24 points, a couple interceptions by Prescott, his worst game of the year so far. We've been talking about how this Broncos defense has not stepped up all year round, and they really delivered with the big win here.
Yeah, big defense there by the Broncos, but I think more importantly, the offense, right? I mean, did nothing for 6 quarters. The last 5 quarters, they've scored, 77 points, I think it is.
Yeah,
they got the run game going. I mean, yeah. I said last, you know, on Friday, this was a get right game for the Broncos on that offense.
You're right.
That's what it was, because now they get a tough Texas team on the road. I believe that's going to be a tough battle with that defense. So, yeah, I mean, agree with all the big wins. I think another big win, too. Impressive. Maybe the second best team right now in the AFC, the way they're playing. You could argue the Chiefs are, but the Patriots. Patriots are playing really good football. They dismantled the Browns, who a week before dismantled the Dolphins. They're 6-2. No one's talking about that, but the Patriots are in first place in the AFCs. So
that's crazy, man. And Drake May playing lights out. Lights out.
Yeah, Drake May's looking good. That offense is looking good. More importantly, that defense is looking really good. And they still got another home game against Buffalo late in the year. And a couple matchups with the Jets. So, I mean, the Patriots are, I think they're a playoff team.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we had them on the fringes of being a playoff team in our season preview as one to look out for. And amazing, I mean, them being at 6-2 right now, and think about their two losses, that Steelers game where they turned the ball over, five times or something like that. And then
three in the end zone by the goal line. So, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they in that Raiders game at the start of the season where they just never got anything going. So, I mean, it's a team definitely on the rise, winning 5 straight right now. And, you know, we'll have some tough games coming up with the Falcons and the Buccaneers. But you're right, Aaron. Like, you know, first place in this division, they're going to have some showdown games with the Bills here towards the end of the season, because they really got, like, the Buccaneers, Falcons, and then Bills, and then you had a big Ravens game later on in the year. But, you know, they got two games against the Jets. They got another Dolphins game. There's a lot of wins in this team for all of a sudden you can see them getting to 11 wins, you know, fairly soundly on this schedule.
Yeah, schedule lines up pretty nice. I mean, the Atlanta, that game's in, is it Spain? Is that the game that's in Madrid? I know it's an international game, right? I'm not sure
which
that's
one?
The one.
I'll go by schedule.
Patriots versus Atlanta. Is that an international game?
I don't think so. It's at 10 a.m.
All right. No, it's not. Okay.
I don't think so.
You're talking Falcons Colts. That's the next
one. Okay. That's what it is. All right. I know that they played them coming up. So, all right.
That's a week 10.
I was looking at week 9. So I knew Atlanta was one of the teams. I wasn't sure if that was this week. But yeah, I mean, give a lot of credit to, we've talked about coaches on this that are good offensive coordinators and terrible head coaches. Josh McDaniels has called a hell of a year so far. The offenses look great. A lot of mix-up formations in the run game. Mays look awesome, like you mentioned, Rome. But please, don't be fooled. Do not give this guy another head coaching gig. He's not good for it. But as far as calling offensive plays for the Patriots, hit him in the Patriot Hall of Fame, because this guy 100%. Knows how to call plays.
It's funny, because there was for a very long time, you know, after he didn't have the great stint in Denver, and then eventually made his way back to the Patriots, I thought for the longest time he was going to be the coach in waiting for Belichick, and then ended up taking that. Yeah, that was what I always thought was the internal succession plan for it.
Yeah,
yeah. And then he left and took that. Remember, he took the Colts job and then like decided he wasn't going to take
it. Him,
and,
yeah.
And I think that's when, like you're talking about, Jason, I think he got kind of wind that, hey, hang around here, you're the next guy.
Yeah, and that was the moment where I was like, okay, cool. Like, they're just promising him the future. And then I guess I don't know if he got impatient and then took that Raiders job, and then it didn't work out again. So crazy how things have turned out. But I agree with Aaron. Like, a guy I think you could always fall in love with as an offensive coordinator because he's gotten the most. And when you think about the Patriot offenses over those years where, you know, he crafted it in some different ways. I know you give a lot of credit to Brady and Belichick and stuff. But we think about, hey, they had the Randy Moss offense, but then they also had the two tight end offense with Gronk and everything. You know, different ways they've used the running backs. Never really had a top wide receiver after Moss, but figuring out creative ways the offense. And
that
now,
Gronk,
you know.
That Gronk and Hernandez pairing killed.
Literally.
Yeah. It killed defenses. All right.
Yeah, it did, but you think about how revolutionary it kind of was at the time where all of a sudden, hey, these guys are just putting two tight ends that are your like primary receivers. And then what they've, you know, where are they growing for slot wide receivers? And, you know, pretty much made it fashionable with the Edelmans and Welkers and Amendolas and stuff to have, hey, this like,
They made it so white boys could play wide receiver in the NFL.
Fair.
That gave me and Jason hope when we were playing high school football. Like, hey, you know, Patriots, these guys, you know, they set people up, man.
I'm trying to decide after like all these wins that we talked about, like who had the biggest win? And I keep on going back to the Packers. Like that sticks out the biggest for me. Like Steelers, I don't know what's going on with that defense. Highest paid in the NFL. They don't look a semblance of what they did last year or years past. Offense is looking okay. I'm liking the Rodgers thing. Tomlin, their OC pairing, I think they're efficient. They just didn't look very good in the second half, but the Packers looked really nice in that second half Sunday night. And I don't know, like this is looking like the biggest win of the week. Quality opponent boosted up that resume a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, at Pittsburgh, I think this was a game for Jordan Love in primetime where you start saying, hey, this is the franchise guy. You know, you look at a lot of debate within that division where you got Jared Goff, who had been, you know, so impressive, and, you know, Caleb Williams maybe on the rise, maybe not. But Jordan Love, he's had some really great games, but has had some questionable games as well, too. You know, but this Packer season overall, besides that weird 40-40 tie that I don't think anyone to this day can explain, and then the really bad loss to the Browns where, I mean, you know, us three, and I think a lot of media was really crowning the Packers after they really, you know, clamped down the Lions in week one defensively and were able to, you know, put a good offensive performance there. You know, they bounced back from that lost tie when they were 2-1-1 and had some solid wins against, you know, beat up Bengals team, kind of a beat up Cardinals team. But this was a statement win where they're at. And then, you know, then there's life down their schedule too, where they're going to play the Panthers and then a big showdown with the Eagles on Monday night on November 10th. And that, you know, that could be, that's a kind of maybe an NFC championship type of preview type game when you look at that, you know, 2 weeks down the road.
All right. So with the Steelers loss, man, that was a big loss. They probably should have beat the Bengals, but that's just the way it is, right? They lose another one. So back-to-back losses now. Their schedule upcoming is going to get a little tight. They got Colts next week. They got the Chargers after that, which I still want to go to that game. Bengals.
I'll sum it up for you, Rome, real quick. The Steelers are in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just not beat around the bush. They're in trouble with that schedule.
Then they got the Bears, and which I don't have an opinion
that's
on.
That's at
that
Chicago.
Game yet.
That's at Chicago.
Yeah, it's at
it's
Chicago.
Not gonna be
an
easy game.
I think the only way, the only reason you feel good about that is because Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears. So you know, he'll come up for that one.
Well, if it's cold too, like the Steelers, you know, show up for these cold games and it's going to be at the end of November. Then they got the Bills, Ravens, you know, it's a tough 5-game stretch right now. Like, I feel like they're hating themselves for not at least getting one of these wins. That was a tough, tough loss. Other bad losses or tough losses?
Atlanta. I don't think there's a week I can go by and understand this team at all.
No.
I just don't. Like, I just
1 week, like, look great. 1 week, they don't.
I just don't. That Bills game, you know.
Them dismantling the Vikings.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bills.
I mean, the Commanders, when we thought they were kind of good at that point. I mean, but you lose the Niners game. Okay, the Niners, you know, they got something about them here. But, you know, the Dolphins have been almost lifeless the entire year. And to get beat and just beat bad, too. I I mean, it just wasn't close. They didn't get anything going with Bijan. I thought that was going to be a huge game for Bijan Robinson. Just never clicked. But I mean, week to week, I have no idea what's going on with this Falcons team. I don't think it looks any better for them because they got to play the Patriots and they got to play the Colts. It's a team, and now for 2 years, we've been waiting to break out and kind of take ownership of that division. And now they're sitting here third in the division with a minus 34 point differential right now.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta, I kind of want to give them a pass because they played Kirk Cousins and Drake London were out. You know, yeah. Penix and Drake London were out, kind of like last second scratches.
Yeah.
And then you got Kirk Cousins that looked, you know, I don't know if he's 38, 39, whatever age, but he looked 50 in that game because he looked garbage. And I don't know if they were trying to maybe try to shop him around before the trade deadline, but I'm not buying. I'm definitely not buying that. I mean, he looked terrible. And they got no run game going. I think Bijan fumbled for the second time this year. I mean, yeah, I mean, Atlanta's been up and down. They've got...
That might have been the worst loss of the week, I think. That,
I mean,
or the Niners.
At home against a team we all said on Friday, basically Miami looked like they had quit. The Dolphins looked like they had thrown in the towel, they'd quit. But once they heard Kirk Cousins was playing and Drake London was out, they got up for that game. They got the smell saw out and they got up for that game and just beat the shit out of the Falcons.
Yeah. You know, 49ers, yeah, you know, they're banged up, so they're bound to lose one of these. I guess maybe worst loss besides that, probably just Steelers. And then the Commanders, Panthers, they just did not show up this week. They just not show up.
I mean, we already talked about it, but I still think the Bears loss was pretty bad too. If I looked at the beginning of the season, this was a game that I would have said the Bears would have lost to Lamar Jackson, but you get the backup quarterback in there. I know the Bears were down to their fourth, fifth, and sixth corner, as we were talking about in the preview, but you know, they held him in check defensively in the first half, and the offense is what, you know, a lot of people in Chicago media and even national people Caleb is the lightning rod of kind of all talk right now. Like everyone in that quarterback class.
I was going to ask you, like, are you listening to all the media chatter about Caleb right now?
I mean, it's constant, nonstop. It was last year and it's going into this year. So it just never stops.
It was a lot today.
It was a ton because like it's so reactive, you know, week over week. Because when they win, you know, you can't play much about it when he's not lighting it up. I think there are still things to work on with Caleb, and you know, there is tools that Ben Johnson utilized with him that are not Jared Goff that he even says you don't want to take some of these special things he does away from him, but there's still things that he needs to improve on. The biggest thing overall is going to be like, what is his accuracy going to be?
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's ever going to be the accurate NFL quarterback. They talked about the broadcast. They talked about it weeks where just like, you know, he's going at like low 60% completion. You know, and that just doesn't get it done in the NFL a lot of time, even when you make some big plays. And there's just seemingly not always a loss of rhythm with him. You know, he can't get the rhythm going, and it gets him into longer. And the biggest thing with the Bears is the penalties beyond that, too. They're one of the most penalized teams in the league that just takes away and puts him in bad. Now, some of these penalties, I'll say, like, you know, there's some terrible refereeing going on. There was another – the clinching play from DeAndre Hopkins, he basically – face mask the defensive back to seal the game that wasn't called again. So
that refereeing was bad. I mean, the Bears got hosed on a few plays. They got lucky on the forward progress because that was not forward progress. Should have been an interception for Baltimore. So the referees did kind of throw him a bone back that
there
way.
There was. You're keeping me in check, and you're absolutely right, Aaron. So, but I won't
the
say
face
the,
mask, the face mask was bad. That was a fourth down two play, right? I believe.
Fourth down conversion. Yeah. Face mask on offense, not called. Yeah. But
one-on-one. Yeah. No one else in the field of view. That's the easiest call to make.
Yeah, but I mean, Aaron's checking me right. You can't take the penalties as the reason the Bears lost that game. Like, you got to score more points. Like, it's you can't settle for field goals. And like the other thing is like the Bears got the only kicker in the league that can't kick it beyond 43 yards too. And so they activate Cairo Santos back to the active squad and put Moody back down. Like, I don't care. Like, get me the guy. I was even texting my one friend. I want both kickers active. Anything 40 or less, you have Cairo go.
College rule over here.
Yeah, anything like 45 or more, have Moody out there. I mean, we got to be able to like
not
have some like
kickoff specialist over here.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, do something else. I mean, how valuable this is. If the accuracy of Cairo is where we're at, but we need the additional leg. I mean, someone find the roster spot because it seems to me at this point we got to have those points because. You know, Cairo coming up short on like a 54 yard or whatever it was in the first half. Like, you can't come up short on anything like less than 60 at this point in this league.
I agree. I don't know if we touched on this team as one of the biggest losses of the week, but the Bengals. Yeah. The Bengals losing that game, that's a huge loss. I mean, we talked about Baltimore getting a big win, but the Bengals could have gotten to 4-4, sitting there pretty nice, two wins in a row. They get the lonely Jets. Jets scored 39 points in that game. The Jets have only scored, 18 points over the last two games combined. That just shows you how bad this defense is. And if they lose Trey Hendricks, which they lost early in that game, they've got no pass rush and they can't stop anybody. No wonder he's getting $30 million a year. They might want to give him $60 million just to freaking put a fake leg on him and get him out there, because Bengals, I don't know what to make of it. I think Zach Taylor's on his way out. He's going to get fired. He's going to be a casualty here. And, you know, they moved off Lou Amarillo, who's killing it for the Colts on defense with my guy Steichen. Bad move there. Rome, you were calling for him out the door last year. He's not going to survive this year.
I think you're right. I don't think we have a coach's hot seat going on yet.
I mean, we talked about McDaniel. We talked about it, right? I don't think you've listed your top. I mean, you got a certain point last year. You're in your Rome's top five coaches hot seats.
Yeah.
But I agree with Aaron. This was a win that they should have had. Obviously, we talked about it. I thought they did have it. And it was a win that puts you at 4-4 going versus the Bears at home next week, which is a winnable game for the Bengals. And then you go into after the Bears game, they got at Steelers, Patriots, at Ravens, at Bills, home Ravens. That's a juggernaut five-game stretch.
I just realized something, and we probably should have paid attention to this when we were doing our picks. As bad as the Jets have looked, they played most of their games at home. They only got three home games left, either three or four, however they split. I didn't look. But on the road, though, they've been competitive in every single game. 27-29 lost the Bucks. 21-27 lost the Dolphins.
What's funny, Rome, if you go back and look at all those games against the Bucks and now the Bengals, they were getting crushed going into the fourth quarter. They were down, 27-6 going into the fourth quarter against the Bucks. Remember, they got that blocked field goal for a touchdown. Eric Glenn's out there doing the moonwalk. And
yeah.
Remember? And
that
then
was
they're
so
down.
Epic.
They're down 15 here against the Bengals and come back and win. And this is basically 3 days after the owner basically said Justin Fields sucks, shouldn't be playing quarterback. Now he gets the win. What are you going to do when Tyrod Taylor's ready to play? You're going to go back to Fields on the bench? It seems like every time he wins, they just throw him on the bench in Pittsburgh and New York. And when he loses, they go, "Hey, go back out there and give us another inning." I don't know what to make of the Jets, man. I'm just going to flip a quarter, and whatever side it ends up on, that's what side I'm going with, because they've been screwing me more times than I can think of. But I am glad they did win in a way, because they did eliminate 765 people in the circuit contest. So there was some silver lining at the end of that.
Nice. Who'd you go with again?
Patriots, man.
Patriots. Nice. What do you think about for next week?
Next week's easy, man. It's either the Packers or the Rams. One of the two. Both teams got easy W's, I believe.
Rams facing the Saints, Packers facing the Panthers.
I think 85-90% of the remaining field is going to be on one of those two teams.
Really?
Yeah. I'll have to look and see if there's other games, but I think I'm saving them for week 10 against your Steelers, but the Chargers against the Titans would be another enticing game. But I usually stay away from road teams and Survivor. Just not now.
No, that's fair. All right. Guess I'll do it for week 9. Week 9? Week 8. Week 8.
The Ocho.
I guess I'll reveal my updated power rankings right now.
Rome, before you get to your power 8, we got a man rounding third here.
Really? Oh, you're a few seconds ahead of me, man.
Oh, my God. Again, he is. I won't say it.
Damn it, dude. So they get a hit right now? Oh, wow.
You guys still haven't seen the hit yet?
No,
the pitch is about to happen for me.
I just saw it.
I'm still the pitch is happening right now. Okay, it's down the line.
Oh, that's a nice throw. Oh, my God. That was so nice. This game is stressing me out, man. I need a shot.
Wow, he wasn't even close.
No, yeah. He was out by five feet.
That's a big guy. He was hustling. You kind of got to, though. It's the World Series. You're in extra innings. He went for it. I probably went a little too wide. It's not that big. All right, so power rankings going to week 9. Not much has changed at the top since we had, I think, four of the five teams on bye weeks. But number 8, they drop a few spots, but it's the Seahawks. They're on a bye. but it's because we got a few additions for this week. We had to drop the Niners, and now the Packers make their way into the power rankings after a lot of what do you call that? Whatever Aaron was doing, like
a lot of internal discussions we had earlier today, Rome, to try to get some of these teams into the Power Eight.
Yeah, so Packers go into number 7. Patriots raise up 1 to number 6. Number 5 through 1, there's no change. We got the Eagles at 5, Bucks stay at 4, Rams stay at 3, Lions stay at 2, Colts stay at 1 with the victory. So not a lot of movement. That is it. We will see where the Bills or the Chiefs end up after next week. I imagine I'll have to put one of them back in there. And
I got to tell you, Rome, you may not have done the hot seat for NFL coaches, but this Blue Jays third base coach should be on the hot seat. Vlad was on deck.
Oh, really? Oh, dude, that's.
I mean, both teams have had a lot of base blunder errors in this game.
Oh, dude, the Dodgers have been.
I think I've seen at least 5 guys thrown out either home or third base in this game.
The Dodgers have looked like the Yankees last year, like just uncharacteristic bad fielding. Some errors, but it is what it is. Yeah, let's do it for the NFL. Giddy up, giddy up. Time for a little F1 coverage. I don't know why I say giddy up, giddy up, but couldn't say kickoff. Green flag, start your engines. We're going to cover
lights out. It's lights out and away we go, Rome. Come on.
I think we should just have Jason do the intro for the F1 segment once we start. I mean, he's got it down pat. He's ready.
I'm just ripping off Crofty from the F1 broadcast. But, man, yeah,
giddy up. Am I at the horseback show here or what?
Yeah, I guess. He thought he was doing the Preakness coverage right now.
Kentucky Derby's back in May, so... Yeah.
It is, yeah. Anyways, I don't know why I looked up F1 Austin, but we just had the Mexican Grand Prix this past weekend. Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. I think my favorite track. It's a really cool track. Out of all the races I've seen so far, that might be my favorite track. How about you guys?
No, I agree. I think it's one of my favorites. Hasn't always proved to have the best races, but there's just some real cool aesthetics in that. I think turn one, obviously, great drama on the start. It's got the really long stretch. You know, you go into turn one, and then after turn three, another DRS zone. After that, you got a nice, you know, horseshoe loop. And then the stadium section, probably one of the more unique things in an F1 track where, you know, it's kind of like an old soccer stadium that they basically put an F1, you know, track in the middle of it, right at the end. So yeah, one of my favorites in the calendar every year, Rome too. I think just aesthetically, it's really cool. And then obviously the elevation in Mexico City, you know, leads to, you know, different type of race.
It's very picturesque. I can't talk anymore. Picturesque.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. It was really beautiful. I liked how even like the track, like the stands and like the track cut in between like several sections, different angles, the grass. I liked how a lot of drivers just went off the track themselves, create like a lot of drama. It all started in lap one, though. By the way, Lando Norris just dominated, man. This whole thing was up to like 28 seconds. Both pit stops, he had like 20 seconds plus. So was able to pit, come out, no problem. Lapped a few guys at the end. He just had a great race. So now the driver's championship, he has a 1 or 2 point lead?
He's got a 1 point lead right now. So yeah, I think we just get into that, Rome. I think we talk more about the race.
Let's do it.
I do want to talk about Lando. So we had our mid-season F1 recap, you know, with the three of us, and we had our guest on. Rome, you and I, if we're talking who's on between Team McLaren, you and I were for Team Lando. Aaron's been Team Piastri. And Aaron was looking really good on Team Piastri there post the break. Lando had the engine blow up at Netherlands. And it just seemed after that one, man, the McLarens were so dominant. You know, it just didn't seem like there was anything that was going to stop them from having, you know, one, two finishes. And then the McLaren, as we talk back, has just taken huge steps back here. And now Piastri hasn't been great. And Lando seemingly found, you know, something these past couple weeks, and this was the dominant performance he really needed to get those extra points. And like you said, I mean, he didn't even do FP1. This was a big race for a lot of the younger drivers in FP1 that were coming out and getting their, you know, rookie testing kind of in. So he comes in FP2 and really set that point, dominated the entire weekend, set the high qualifying pace, and Lando's big thing had been bad starts. And obviously, we just talked about turn one. We'll talk about more a little bit. But, you know, he had a solid start, held off both Ferraris and Max. And then once he was in the lead, you know, he just, like you said, there was no one catching to him. And this is the kind of dominant performance you need. And now with four races to go and two sprints, you know, he's got all the momentum behind him. And it turns into a toss-up to him and Piastri, where Piastri's just been reeling because it hasn't. There's been a lot of controversy on team decisions and whatever it may be. However, like, Piastri hasn't shown up in these past couple of races just purely in qualifying, where he's putting himself behind the eight ball. And this was a perfect example of it. I mean, he fell back to, I think, maybe 11th at a certain point on that first lap.
Yeah. I think around 11th. Yeah.
He was between 9 and 11th, I think, yeah. The first 10 laps of that race before he kind of maneuvered in and finished, what, fifth?
It was really good. Play calling, I guess that's what I'm gonna call it, when he pitted with everybody else. And well, he was stuck, and they pitted, what, like in 2.6 seconds, got out ahead of everyone else, and then that kind of led him up to fifth, got really close to Bearman and had a chance, but it was like that really iffy caution at the end, where even like the announcer was like, I want to see replays of like where this debris is, because no one really believed it should have been called at all. And that kind of helped Leclerc keep second and not have Verstappen pass him up. Bearman holds on to four, and Piastri, if he would have went up to fourth, he would have had the 1 point lead, right? I believe, but now he's 1 point back.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. I think number one, the pit stops you mentioned, like Mercedes dropped the ball in the pit stops because they totally let both of those guys down, like over a second more than the McLarens in the pit stops. So yeah. Kimi Antonelli lost the spot to Piastri. So kudos to the McLaren team because they got him that position without having to get it on the track. He probably got it anyways, but I think getting ahead of him, getting ahead of Antonelli, not wasting that time, it made him to potentially be competitive to get to Bearman. I thought it was interesting that they even pitted. I mean, for Bearman, I don't know if he could have held off Max, but he was in a position. If he would have just went with the one-stop strategy, you know, and kind of held on to the ends, could he have held off Max and
could have got a podium?
Podium would have been Haas's first podium in their history.
They were talking about that.
Yeah, and so I was very. I mean, it just seemed really weird that they were going to the two stopper, where you saw these other guys were all in on the one stop strategy from the jump, where Orlando, I think Charles and Max, definitely the Red Bulls were definitely on that one stop. So when that kind of group went with the Mercedes and Oscar, I was like, we're gonna do this too. I don't think there's enough time to even catch, you know, Max, let alone, you know, pass him at a certain point. And yeah, there was a lot with the strategy in that race. I think overall it was a fantastic result for Bearman and that team, but the drive from Max as well too, because, man, like, one-stop strategy takes those medium tires to the limit and then goes, I don't know, what do you go, 30 laps on the softs or something like that?
Yeah.
And was still, you know, gaining on Charles there at the end with kind of the superior tire and without the virtual safety car that you talked about. I think it was less debris. It's more, it was like with Carlos Sainz's car.
It was a car that was like off track, right? But it was supposed to be hidden in a corner that wasn't, you know,
like backed up. Yeah.
A high risk area.
I think it was Sainz, which was all sorts of crazy why that car was still racing too, because he didn't even have the pit limiter working on his car because got caught speeding in the pits because the pit limiter wasn't working and the car was bouncing up and down or whatever he was complaining about. So, I mean, The Williams are a weird bunch, man. I mean, they're locked in the fifth, we talked about, but there's some races where that car is just crap. Just
what's up with Sainz? It seems like every race there's always like some penalty or something that he does, and he's like, "That's not my problem," or like, "That's bullshit." He's always reflecting it off as like it's everyone else's issue but his. But he's
I think that's every
he had a couple infractions. Yeah, but it just kind of sticks out. It's always him though. Like every race is always something about him cussing everyone else out.
Yeah, no? I mean, Yeah, Aaron's right. I think it's a little bit F1.
I mean every F1 guy. I mean, you had Russell Verstappen, man, just went into the grass. God. Like he needs to give the spot back. He needs to give the spot back right
Dude,
off
he
the
was
bat
for like the first five laps.
And then, like, okay, oh, yeah. I know we were talking about it. He was like, "Hey, Hey, I got a McLaren up my ass. What do you want me to do? I got a McLaren up my ass. Get me out of my way.
He was all-time, man. He said, yeah, I got a McLaren on my ass, and then asking his guy, do you want me to just let Piastri by or what? Yeah. Like, just like, no, it's okay. And then, yeah, he's saying, like, hey, let Kimi pass me. I'll give him the position back if I can't, you know, catch Behrman or whatever it was, too. And then Antonelli, yeah, no shade on him. He immediately, as soon as Russell got passed by Piastri, he's like, we need to swap the positions back now. I mean, it wasn't even done, and he somehow saw, like, give me my spot back.
Hey, it wasn't even like a 2-second delay. As soon as he saw, hey, we need to swap back.
Yep. Yeah,
and then they didn't even put the Mercedes radio on. They're like, we'll let them handle that later. Let's go somewhere else.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There was some hilarious stuff. But, yeah, George is on an all-timer, man, because he gets so, like, passive aggressive, like whatever, just like that draw English like thing over the radio. These guys, I don't know how the hell these guys have this stuff when they're going 200 miles an hour or whatever they're doing.
It was just really funny hearing all the complaining in the beginning. I'm like, what? Like, you know?
I mean, it was wild. I mean, I was pissed as a Lewis Hamilton fan of whatever the hell was going on there. I mean, that.
Yeah. Did you think it was fair getting that 10 second penalty?
No, I thought it was BS because, I mean, they're saying because he didn't go off the safety road.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, the safety road looked like it was like 3 feet wide.
Dude,
over there.
Hey, wait,
like,
wait. Did the safety road look like a bike pathway?
Yeah, that was
100%.
It. Yeah, like, that was it.
I watched the replay. I'm like, wait, where is the safety road? Is it that curly line in the fucking middle?
It.
What the hell is that? Why the hell would I go like do that?
And if you follow the trail, the safety road, you will just end up straight into the wall. I really don't know how you turn onto the track. It's just not that good.
Yeah, and I felt like if he filed the safety roll, it puts him like at a 90-degree angle to oncoming traffic instead of a better merge. And so,
exactly.
And then to follow the safety, I mean, if they don't follow the safety roll, they go through the grass. Seemingly, going through the grass actually hurt Lewis's car because I think he ripped up the bottom of the floorboard because they talked about some aerodynamic issues potentially because he wasn't really gaining anything. So he kind of did the more thing to detriment to his car. And so the advantage that he got that was worthy of a 10-second penalty was insane, considering Verstappen just flies off the track on lap one.
And nothing for him.
Nothing. Like, just didn't get back anything. And I know they were saying, okay, he was tied maybe a fourth at that point because you had Lando, the two Ferraris, and Verstappen, you know, all into that bunch. And the two Ferraris and Verstappen were three wide. And Max was saying, oh, I got pinched. I'm like, he made it three wide going into a tight turn. Goes off-road, doesn't give any of the time back. I think Russell was kind of accurate there. But then in another moment, like, Hamilton's basically forced off the track. So I don't know. I didn't agree with the penalty, especially because there were so many other things that they didn't penalize in that race. But I do partially blame Ferrari because they should have told Lewis, back it off and give some of the time back. Because he got back.
That was a lot of criticism going on the broadcast.
And they were absolutely right because he did shortcut it to a degree. But if he would have let off the gas and let them just back it up on him, got them within 1 second of the DRS, they could have made the argument to the stewards like, hey, he couldn't kind of maneuver it and get on the track, got back on, gave the time back, allowed people within, you know, within the 1 second. And so I think that was mismanagement there. There's too much of that crap where you stand on your principles, whether, you know, there was a time, I don't remember what race it was, when like George Russell accidentally had the DRS open in a section he couldn't have. And like, he literally like,
yeah, cause he pressed the wrong button, right? Or something.
Yeah. Pressed the wrong button, opened the DRS, and then literally like went off the gas at a certain point to give the advantage back. And so there's so much digital stuff on this. They were able to see that he put off the accelerator and then he didn't get penalized or anything for it. So there could have been at this moment where, hey, Lewis gets ahead of them, gets these couple extra seconds, give that back, and he probably doesn't get the 10-second penalty. So you put that on Ferrari a little bit, but it was, I don't know, you go to the stewards and this crap all the time. You seemingly give away anything on lap one. That's kind of like the unwritten rule of like, crap's going to happen on lap one. Everyone's together. Things happen. We let it kind of shake out. But when it comes to these tracks where just passing is so like difficult, like you're letting them potentially get this advantage that's almost makes it impossible to pass in a lot of instances. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's still irritating because, like, I mean, Ferrari had the car where Lewis should have been, you know, third on the podium. Like
he was doing pretty good. Then they had that 10 second pit. And then he dropped down like 14th or so. And then finished with, what was it, eighth? That's unfortunate.
I mean, Ferrari, I mean, to your point, I think he could have dropped back. But I think they saw Verstappen did it, nothing happened to him. So I think they were kind of hoping, like, all right, well, nothing's going to happen. I mean, I think Hamilton in the first lap was noted on three different incidents. You know, I think there was like a little tire bumping with maybe Verstappen or somebody. And it's, you know, it's like, oh, noted. Then later, nothing happening. Oh, further investigation going on. And then it was like, whatever, lap 20, finally they announced like, oh, 10-second penalty for Hamilton. So it's like,
that was crazy.
It was crazy. But I'll say, like, going back to the top of the segment, Rome, talking about the track and everything, I think it was a really exciting race considering Lando wins this thing by 28 seconds and you didn't have much really for the winning race. But ton of action, different strategies going on the race with some of these guys doing the one stopper, even the Red Bulls starting on the medium. I think Max starting on the medium was really interesting because he had the faster tire at the end of the race. The hard tire just being crap. There's some of those guys start there and they weren't getting anything out of that. A lot of DNFs too. That was kind of, you know, interesting with Hulkenberg, Alonso, you know, Lawson was out pretty early.
What happened with Lawson? I read he almost killed like two people on the track running.
What?
I think that was during practice or qualifying. Like I saw that today too. I missed some of the weekend and stuff, but yeah, there was a official on the track or something like that that was on there when he was driving by.
But one he almost hit because they were picking up debris during like a track run or something.
I missed that.
I saw it today.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dangerous stuff. You got all these virtual safety cars and stuff that when these guys run on the track to grab a piece of fiberglass and stuff. But
I thought it was like one of the more entertaining races. It was filled with a lot of stuff, and it's kind of like the race for, like, we were talking about the tight race for the constructors, 2, 3, 4. That's looking like it's going to be a lot of fun watching down the stretch. Now we got the drivers. So Norris is down in first, Piastri in second. Your boy Verstappen, he chips away a little bit more as well. So it's. I think I saw a stat. This is the first time that we've had a lead change this late in the season since 2012.
I would believe it. I mean, a lot of times you get down to this point in the calendar and someone's kind of sewn it up, especially when you get a lot of wins in a season. But these cars are just so close at this point, the last couple of races of this regulation where, you know, all top four of the teams when it comes to McLaren, Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes are very close. And Max, you know, I don't think he got all the points he needed out of this race. I think he needs, 12 points a weekend right now to be able to make up this deficit. So, I mean, it got a little thinner with Lando having such a dominant race. You have two sprints and four races. The next two races, I think, is where Verstappen really is going to have, the points kind of make up, because a year ago in Brazil, he has one of the greatest drives of all time in the rain that we talked about. That was like, just amazing. So this is a track he can do well. I haven't looked at what the weather is going to be in Brazil, but I mean, it would favor him and like Hamilton and like Alonso and some of these guys are just like unbelievable in the rain. So it'll be an interesting track. It's not the high speed corner stuff. And Aaron and I have been predicting the George Russell win in Vegas here for a little while, but I think the Mercedes and the Red Bull in Vegas would be something to look out for. Not the best track for McLaren. I think the final two tracks in Qatar and Abu Dhabi are the high speed, flatter tracks that McLaren generally is better at historically. But now that they're getting, so I think those are the ones that McLaren's probably going to be good at. So what kind of going to in this is Verstappen's got to make up some points here in Brazil and Las Vegas to give them the chance. But at this point, anything can happen. You got a straight duel between Norris and Piastri right now. It's all basically tied up, you know, and not what's qualifying look like, who's getting the favorable strategy. They've created an interesting problem for themselves in the McLaren. Like I said at the beginning of the season, this might be Lando's only shot to win a championship because the McLaren car is dominant. He's been with this team a long time from when they were one of the worst in the field and now the best. And then what does this car look like for 2026? You don't know. And Piastri's been more of the stealth killer, although he's shown more of the kind of the emotional side and hasn't found his form recently. But, you know, You don't win these things. I mean, some of the times, a lot of F1 drivers, you're either like a 7-time world champion or you got one championship and that was it. You know, James Hunt, Jenson Button, Nico Rosberg, one championship and all it is. And so these guys are going down to it. And I think the interesting question following the season, whoever doesn't win, let's assume one of the McLaren wins. I know Verstappen's lurking right now. But whoever doesn't win a McLaren, what are their feelings coming out of this season when their contract is up in a year or two or whatever the out was? Because these guys both want to be a number one. And if Lando wins, and the popular thinking around Formula One and fans and everything is that McLaren has been favorable to Lando. Zach Brown, McLaren CEO, he's the second dad to Lando. This is the guy that he's kind of brought up all through things. And Piastri was team principal Andrea Stella's guy. Oscar, he's got a manager, Mark Webber, who was the number two at Red Bull when they were winning a bunch of championships in the early 2010s, and he never got it. He was just the number two there. And so I think there's always the things that he feels a certain way about what Piastri's going to be treated. So does he take Piastri elsewhere if the treatment isn't there and they don't have the car when, hey, Red Bull has an open seat if Max Verstappen leaves? You know, Ferrari, if Charles Leclerc decides he's going to leave, there's a lot of rumors around that. So there's going to be some fallout of one of these guys not winning. And I don't know what the long term is if these guys being the two drivers at McLaren.
They just signed contracts, though. I think they're locked in for like at least another 3 years, right? So that's not something we're going to see for a while.
It's fair. I think you're probably right. But at the same time, these Formula One contracts, you know, there's out clauses and all
there's
sorts of
offset
other things.
Language, yeah. As we've learned on a lot this weekend.
That's so crazy.
I guess you're right. His multi-year extension takes him to 2028. So, yeah. So, it's out there. So, I mean, maybe it's nothing. We're kind of creating the drama on our podcast and others, too. But, you know, you're a competitive guy, man. You got to be across. You know, this is your teammate. And the team cares about winning the constructors. They did. And now it's hey, who's the top dog? And you're going to be battled down. So, the decisions McLaren makes here down the stretch will be very interesting how they manage these races, because qualifying is going to say a lot on race strategy and priority. And, you know, these guys are also, you start getting too aggressive with each other, Max continues to lurk.
So Brazil's in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the ninth.
Right?
I checked the weather. Shows rain.
Yeah.
60% chance rain. So
nice.
It looks like we'll have some rain. But yeah, going back, I mean, whoever, like Jason said, whoever wins between Lando and Oscar, you're the top dog. You get priority. You are the mainstay. You are the top driver. Unless, you know, one wins it this year, the other wins it the following year. But yeah, to Jason's point, we'll see what the McLaren looks like. But Lando's looking good. He's looking strong. He's racing well. Piastri just doesn't seem to have pace. He's not been very comfortable. He's not been doing good in qualifying. Can he turn it around here with four races to go? And like, you know, Jason said, Verstappen's lurking. He just keeps winning second, first, third. If he can win, you know, if he can do another race like Jason mentioned in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where he wins and McLaren kind of plays it safe with the weather being bad, things get really interesting here.
100%. Some stuff, because it is the battle for second in the constructors now. Ferrari is in second, 356. They had a pretty good race this past week. Could have been better if Hamilton didn't get fucked so badly. Mercedes, a point back at 355. Red Bull Racing, 9 points back at 346. You look at fifth. We said Williams is kind of stuck there at 111, but they got the Racing Bulls. Do you think they can catch them with 72 points? Aston Martin's only 3 points back from them. And then you got Haas a few more points back from that. It's tight 2 through 4, and then tight 5 through 9, it looks like. Jeez. Alpine, yeah. Just stuck down below.
Yeah, Alpine. Well, I mean, if you think a year ago, Alpine, they were in the same position, 10th, and then they got second and third during that rain race, and that shot them up because it gave them, like, you know, 30-something points in one race. So, I mean, you never know what happens in some of the rain races. I think you're most primed to rain only in Brazil, and then you got basically three races in the desert. But yeah, I mean, very tight there. Haas, great performance from Behrman, and even Ocon was in the top 10. So that makes them a little bit competitive. Racing Bulls haven't looked as great lately. Aston Martin, you know, some DNFs for them. So it'll be tight probably from that 6 through 9, Rome. I mean,
right. Yeah, that's crazy, right?
It's really there. So, I mean,
it's 12 points.
It is. So I think there's definitely something within these finishes that can decide a lot. And that's a lot of money from all those teams. Red Bull, I think, even though Verstappen's there, man, Tsunoda is just not giving them anything to help out. I mean, Max is basically almost doing this himself to a degree, holding that team up. So, I mean, Ferrari probably has the advantage. They have probably the best pairing.
It looks like they're starting to do better down the stretch as well. Looks like they're going to end the season with like a good bang.
I think so. I mean, I think Brazil is a great track for Hamilton historically, that, you know, he can do well there, especially if it rains. That will definitely go to what he can do. Vegas, I mean, I still think that's a Mercedes
Russell,
track.
Russell, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, Russell's got to be the favorite to win that one.
I think it's the only race Aaron and I have been like a line calling for weeks on end.
As soon as the odds come out, I'm going to take a look at it before even qualifying. I might throw like $50 on Russell just to try to get it in at good money.
That's fair.
Why not?
So, but yeah, I think Ferrari probably the favorite, because I think they got two drivers versus Mercedes. They got, you know, they got Russell plus, you know, Antonelli's good, but he's going to get up in the podium. And then Max is trying to pull Red Bull by himself. So I think Ferrari gets the advantage because they'll get two guys competing with top points.
Nice. Any other comments regarding the Mexican Grand Prix?
Just looking forward to Brazil. I think it'll be an exciting end of the season. The drama's heating up.
You know, one thing that kind of caught me by surprise, I noticed you try to pick somebody local, you know, like to give away like the trophy. Like they had a really cool trophy for this one. They had a Vander Holyfield.
Vander Holyfield's been making his rounds. He was there in Miami too. I saw him. So he's been making his rounds throughout here on F1.
Holyfield, did he give away the trophy or he just did the checkered flag?
He was a flag. He was
checkered
flag.
Yeah, checkered flag. Yeah, checkered flag. Yeah.
The trophy is generally like someone from the government where it's at. So,
but still, like, I thought they might get like some rising Mexican soccer star or like a boxer, maybe one of the mafia people. I don't know.
The cartel? You know?
The cartel, yeah.
I mean, I think it'll probably take whatever's the biggest celebrity they can get. So,
yeah. Oh, all right. I loved it, man. I loved it. I totally put it on and kicked football off for the first time.
We talked about this, Aaron, I think before you got on, but just overall, like Rome, not knowing anything about F1, you know, over a year ago, similar with you two, and like now he's kicking football off the main TV to watch the Mexican GP this last weekend.
Well, it didn't help that I was losing a lot of bets. So
that's fair.
You go 3-9. I'm not watching a lot either.
I mean, was just fair. Like,
Lando's his only bright spot this weekend. Let's just be honest. Maybe the comedy stuff too. I don't know how that went, but yeah.
Oh, dude, it went really well. Went really well. Got some people asking for my Instagram afterwards. Like, oh, where are you going to perform next? I'm like, I don't know. Yeah, it's all new, but it went pretty well. All right, so I'll do it for F1. I did speak to our friend Andrew the other day.
Did he show up at the Mexican Grand Prix since he's studying all that Spanish?
He invited me to go watch it. I didn't show up. They didn't show up to my comedy, so I'm like, you know what, go fuck yourself. But he did want to come back on the show. It looks like he's back on good spirits. So I forgot to invite him tonight. I think I was supposed to. Totally slipped the ball.
Four races left to go, Rob. We got plenty of time. And plenty of drama to talk about to get Andrew back on here.
Exactly. Cool. I'll do it. F1 with Source from the Sofa. Check us out on YouTube. We are out. All right. This is some extra bonus coverage from Source from the Sofa. As we're not going to fully talk about what happened in college football week 10, I believe. Was it nine? Week 9. Starting to get confusing here, though. But
it's always one more than the pros.
We did well on our picks this past week. We rebounded nicely from games of the week. We went 7-3-1, guys, which brings us to 60 wins with 47 losses and 3 pushes. That is fucking money. We knew we were good, but we're tracking it. We're pretty good. So props to you, Aaron. That is phenomenal as well.
Yeah, I mean, the one game we pushed on, if you were fortunate like Jason and got that hook with Mississippi State plus 7.5, I'm happy for you guys.
You know what? I'm glad I was really shaky about the UCLA game. I was like, the points, I have a feeling they're going to get beat by Indiana. I know that's part one of your locks of the week, and I was like, I don't think so.
Rome, I put that loss on you. You wore the jersey. Don't ever bring it on. I mentioned that Wednesday. I said you're either good luck or bad.
Jason,
Steelers jersey, they haven't won. Now a UCLA jersey.
We were talking about every time I wear a jersey, that's why I don't wear my team jerseys. They fucking lose terribly. And then I was rocking the UCLA thing for the college football show. And they got beat soundly. So
yeah, I mean, you and all my friends that are UCLA fans really were selling us on UCLA being back with this new regime and everything. And man, you know, Indiana.
Indiana put a beat down. And you know what? After that Penn State game, they've done okay, but like the offense hasn't really like come out and perform like that ever since then. It's you know, they're making strides, but yeah, a little too much love. So they lose their first conference game of the year. We also did well on our Westgate super contest. So we're back in the top 100. Confident we'll make some more movement in the coming weeks. So it's been pretty well for college football. It's been really nice. But in surprising fashion, though, we're actually bringing the bonus coverage because I'm going to say Chip Kelly, and it's not Chip
Brian.
Kelly.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking about. Brian.
I couldn't get out of my head now because Jason said earlier, I'm like, ah, no. Brian Kelly, Jason texted us that they're talking about, like, hey, your season's done, bro, which is like a weird precursor to getting fired. Like, okay, so are you getting fired at the end of the season or are you getting fired now? No, you're getting fired now. They also let the top assistant coach go today, which he was pretty instrumental with helping Jaden Daniels win the Heisman. I can't remember his name, but he's
Joe Sloan,
really well respected. So that was kind of surprising. Well, probably because he's like a right hand man for Kelly, so I guess so. But apparently,
I will say, Rome, from what I heard, that, and maybe Jason, you can jump in. I think Brian Kelly met with the AD on Saturday or Sunday morning, and they were going to get rid of. He wanted Joe Sloan gone, so Kelly was going to move off him. But also the offensive line coach. Kelly wanted to get rid of two. I guess the AD had a problem with that. I guess he was kind of the fill-in intern for a while there back in 2021 when Ed Orgeron got let loose.
Oh.
So that was kind of where they had a disconnect. I heard the AD stormed off and, you know, calls, boosters, the governor involved. I mean, the governor literally get involved because they don't have a school president. Hey, how are we going to come up with this money? As they say in Louisiana, we'll find a way. And Brian Kelly's shown the door. A lot of interesting stuff going on down there.
That's surprising. And obviously it was made a big deal when he got hired away from Notre Dame to go to LSU. I found out earlier today that he was initially thinking about leaving Notre Dame and retiring. He was kind of done with the college game, maybe thinking about going to the pros. So the fact that LSU kind of hit him at a time when he was thinking about bouncing out anyways with so much money, you know, he does a hop, skip, and a jump. And starts collecting that fake Bayou accent, and that's to start his tenure at LSU. Start off pretty well, but was kind of shaky with having some pretty big losses. Fans have been clamoring for him to get fired, starting with their first loss of the season. So I'm not really sure. I don't really know any LSU fans personally. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but the rumor is just like the confidence was lost on Chip Kelly early in the year already, and it just got worse with every, I don't know, every loss that they've endured this year. So the coaching carousel is going crazy, kind of imminently like the NFL in college football. Who knows what will be the final remainder buyout for him. But it is rumored that he's going to be receiving $800,000 a month in the meantime. So we'll find more from that. But initial thoughts, reactions from, I would say, the biggest firing so far this year.
Yeah. I'd say biggest firing. I think maybe Aaron's guy in Florida State. Maybe that could be pretty big here coming up too.
That's coming. That's coming. It could happen Sunday too if they lose to Wake Forest.
Yeah,
it's on the horizon. It should have already happened.
And I still don't know because I think the James Franco one honestly was bigger because
I agree.
Penn State going into this season. They were seen as championship. I think LSU was predicted to do better, potentially win the SEC, be one of the teams in the playoff. And so I think this was supposed to be, hey, they didn't have to go undefeated or anything, but I think getting into the playoff was probably a must for Brian Kelly going into this season, but it was never a good fit. I think everyone who said it immediately said it wasn't a good fit.
Yeah.
I'll say like Notre Dame had probably mixed feelings about Brian Kelly through his entire tenure because he came as a coach from Central Michigan that, hey, he won
at Central Michigan, translated into the Cincinnati job, goes undefeated at Cincinnati. He goes 12-0, translate that into the Notre Dame job. He gets Notre Dame 12-1 to the BCS National Championship game. But by 2016, he lost the program, and Notre Dame went 4-8 that year, and he was almost getting fired. And there was times in that, I want to say that, you know, that
BCS, I forgot about all that.
Yeah, there was times in the BCS National Championship, you mentioned him retiring or whatever. I mean, there was tons of talk of him going to the pros. Like, he was always linked to, like, the Giants job and different stuff in New York. And so there was always that with him, even when he was at Notre Dame, that, excuse me, that he was going to go to a bigger job. And, you know, he almost loses his job at Notre Dame, you know, kind of changes his style because he's a pretty, I don't know, edgy, rough around the edges type coach as far as, you know, getting in players' faces and just overall.
I heard he's an asshole.
Yeah, okay, putting it probably what it is. I mean, there's a great story. I think it's Robert Saleh and head coach of the Packers,
Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, they were on his coaching staff at Central Michigan, and I think there's this whole thing, the story about him basically having some sort of Christmas party, and these guys were like graduate assistants or something, and they thought they were invited to the Christmas party, but no, they were brought over there to like work and park people's cars.
Wow.
And so I think there's been a whole thing where these guys have kind of talked through of like, this isn't the type of head coach we want to be type thing. And I think he's always kind of had this reputation, Brian Kelly, as far as, you know, not being the nicest guy. And you know, it comes to a lot in college, these guys like demanding respect and discipline. And I think Marcus Freeman probably the exact opposite. There's like a motivator type coach where these guys really, you know, they're going to run through a brick wall for the guy. And Brian Kelly just wasn't that. And I think it was kind of shocking when he left Notre Dame a little bit because they, you know, they were 11-1 in that season. You know, they were seen to, you know, go to another, you know, to the next level. And you know, he leaves for LSU because all of this time it could be for national championships. And it's looked, Notre Dame's success has probably made it even look worse because he says, I'm leaving Notre Dame to compete for a national championship. And Notre Dame actually does play for the national championship.
Yeah.
And Kelly just never was a fit, whether it was culturally, you mentioned him faking the Bayou accent down there. And
he just didn't seem like an LSU guy either way, right? He just,
no, it didn't fit. I mean, just overall, a guy from the Northeast that coached, you know, Midwest Northeastern teams and fitting in the SEC, you know, I don't think it was there. So I don't know where his future goes. Does he stay in college? Or you mentioned you talk pros. I'd imagine, you know, people are,
I think he's done.
I don't think so. These guys are the coaching carousel goes around. You're gonna have your UCLA Bruins, Wisconsin, you know, one of these other schools that has one of these opens in a big conference, you know, pay him. He may not get the LSU money, but I don't know. I think he finds his way back to be redeeming. I mean, you got what's his face in Arkansas right now for his second tour in Arkansas as interim coach. So these guys always find their way back.
Yeah. I mean, Brian Kelly, to put it like you said, Roman, Jason, like personality wise, he's a dick, right? It's, you know, hey, this is how I do things. And this is how I want it done. And look, that worked in college football a while back, but now you got NIL, you got social media, kids, you know, post stuff. They go, hey, you know what? This guy's an asshole. I can go somewhere else and get paid the same amount of money or more and get treated better. And he never bought into the culture there at LSU. Like, he came there. I mean, he won at LSU. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he won, what, 10 games, 9 games, and, what, 5 this year. I mean, you look at his losses this year, it's against the number 3, what, 5-9 ranked team. So, I mean, he's lost to 3 teams in the top 10. Jaden Daniels, you mentioned, was a good college quarterback, got there. Joe Sloan, QB coach, turns OC. They turn him into a Heisman winner. But the offense, they have roster problems. I mean, defensively, they were not good the first couple years under Kelly. They're a lot better on that side this year. But offensively, their O-line sucks. They're playing a lot of freshmen. Guys that transferred in are either hurt or just not performing at a high level. They can't run the ball. They're situationally bad everywhere. And Texas A&M is a really good football team. And Marcel Reed's probably the front runner for the Heisman, if not this year, next year. He's a really special quarterback.
Yeah, he's really
good. And they just got manhandled by him. And they did last year down there at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Rome, you said you're not sure if he's going to work. I think he's going to work because I think he's already come out and said he wants to coach again. And there's going to be a ton of jobs open. Wisconsin's going to open up. Michigan State's likely going to open up. We know UCLA's open. Penn State's open. Matt Rhule leaves. Nebraska opens up. You don't think Nebraska would like a coach like Brian Kelly coming there to win? I mean, I said Brian Kelly can go to Florida State because he's good for 8 to 10 wins every year. And a lot of these mediocre programs need that right now. You're 65 years old. Come coach 5 years. Maybe you hire another hotshot coach. Because I will say this about Brian Kelly. He's brought in great talent in, but he's also brought in great coaches. He brought in Marcus Freeman, Mike Elko, Clark Lee. All these guys have been defensive coordinators from at all his stops. And now they're excelling all in the top 10, basically, in college football head coaches running elite programs. So he knows how to find talent through coaching and whatnot.
Yeah.
He just hasn't have great relationships with them. I don't know if it's like an ego thing where like, hey, I'm older, I'm smarter, I know the things that I'm doing, and I taught you. That's kind of his problem. But I think if you're a program, I know he won't go to UCLA, but like Wisconsin, that has won a lot and now is really in the dumps.
Huh.
Why not go get Brian Kelly and get back to 8-9 wins and become respectable?
Yeah, especially you look at, you mentioned Wisconsin, but you go to some, the Big Ten's pretty competitive, but the Big Ten's also so big where people question Indiana. You get the right schedule, you win 8-9 games almost pretty easily if you got some, solid talent and you got a disciplined program. You know, the Big 12, man, if it was one of those programs, some wide open, stuff within that conference is pretty balanced. I don't know which jobs you'd be looking at.
Oklahoma State, are they going to commit the money? I mean, that'd be a good landing spot, but you got to commit money. Brian Kelly's not going to go unless you have the resources and commit the money.
Yeah, so the rumor mill's already going around. Aaron, I don't know if you want to share who you think might be good prospects for the LSU job. I was hearing that there's a lot of interest and mutual interest with Dan Lanning.
Dan Lanning was a guy I know LSU would reach out to. He'd be on top of their list. I know they'll probably reach out to Marcus Freeman. And from what I'm hearing through the grapevine, he's not dismissing it. But all these guys are just looking for that next big contract extension at Notre Dame and Oregon. And they'll get it. Dan Lanning's not leaving Oregon. I mean, he's got everything he wants there. LSU, I think LSU's top target should be Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. That would be my number one guy to go get. He's only making $3.7 million, I looked up, at Vanderbilt. Is Vanderbilt going to commit $7.5, $8 million to keep him and give him like a $80 million 10-year contract with a $60 million buyout? I don't see Vanderbilt doing that. I could see LSU easily stepping up to the plate and giving him, $9 million, $54 million contract over 6 years. Another name I mentioned would be Brett Keyes, Georgia Tech's head coach. What he's done with that program, kind of how he fits in culturally, the toughness.
Yeah.
I think he fits in at LSU because he's a younger, better version of Ed Orgeron, who was already there without the party and all the stuff that he had going on. Those would be my two lead candidates for LSU right now that realistically, I think, take the job.
LSU has done well when they hire guys like that. If you remember Saban, he was kind of like unknown but had some success at prior spots. That's when he blew up. The coach that followed him after that, same thing. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it was Les Miles. They got him from Oklahoma State. And Saban, solid success at Michigan State. You think about it, Saban, I think he had questions when he was at Michigan State and then eventually came over, got that program in the right direction and got there. So, yeah, I think Aaron listed off a lot of great contenders. I don't think Dan Lanning, that checkbook is wide open at Oregon. And if I'm Dan Lanning, you have the resources to win a national championship in Oregon. So I don't know you leave to go do that job. I mean, the Phil Knight money is good money. And in the Big Ten right now, they're at worst, the second best team in the Big Ten right now behind Ohio State. That's a good job. Oregon continues to be a good job. I don't see LSU being a much better job than that to go and have to play that schedule. I think Aaron's call for Vanderbilt's coach, I think, is a great call. I mean, college football. I don't know what happened to Rome right now.
Sorry,
I'm still on it was a double. I see a double. Is that behind me? Okay, all right,
They don't have anybody left on their in their bullpen. I think the Dodgers. It's gonna have to be like a position player next. They have to get it here. Go ahead.
I don't even know where I was at, Rome, but I think Aaron Nate just listed off some good names. I'm sure.
I think
the ties to the South, he said, with head coach of Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech makes sense because, you know, hey, the cultural aspect of in that area of the country, knowing they're recruiting. I mean, that was kind of the biggest thing with not the biggest thing, but one of the things with Brian Kelly, like the recruiting aspect of having go down to LSU versus what you were doing with an entire career that was in the Midwest, you know, very different. I don't know if you'd have the same questions about a Dan Lanning type thing, but you know, you got to think of what's the recruiting base of these guys and who they're going to bring in, and the resources are there, and you know, LSU's going to have the resources, but the SEC is only getting harder because you got schools like Vanderbilt and, you know, all these others making it more competitive. Not Texas A&M. Like Aaron and I since last year kind of been on the A&M bandwagon a bit right now. And Elko's got a team right now that, hey, that's turned into a heck of a program because he turned Duke into a really good team that was competitive. And now, you know, they got a lot of resources in Texas A&M. It doesn't make a slam dunk to be one of the four SEC teams that are going to the playoff every year.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've touched on it, Jason, as with this NIL money. The days of just loading up rosters are over. And I think fans now and all these power conferences have to have a realistic what's going to happen, right? There's not going to be every year LSU, Alabama, even Georgia's getting by with some of these close games where they're going to be in the playoff every year. Heck, Texas was preseason number one. They're in the top 25 now, but this isn't a top 25 team. They're not going to the playoff. They're not anywhere near one of the top 4, 5, 6 teams in the SEC this year. Does that mean next year they won't be? So, I mean, it's difficult. The conference is extremely tough. I think you have to have real expectations. Like, do you want to go there with the idea, like, you've got to win every year, you've got to make the playoffs? Like, that's tough to do.
It's tough.
And, you know, Brian Kelly, I mean, it was interesting because obviously A&M beat them bad. And then there was another comment that was brought up. Obviously, they lost Bryce Underwood to Michigan, the number one recruit who was originally committed to LSU. Michigan ponied up to $10 million. LSU didn't. So you traded $10 million for $50 million now. And if you had kept and gotten Underwood, the likelihood of Brian Kelly getting fired was probably not going to happen because you'd be worried about Underwood transferring out of the program. So I think for a lot of these coaches now, they're going to be tied, kind of like the NFL. You're going to be tied to these top prospects coming in at quarterback to where, like, hey, I got the guy, Jaden Daniels. Maybe he saved. Maybe he saved Brian Kelly. And now that he's not there, the wheels have kind of fallen off. And Bryce Underwood was supposed to be that other savior. And that's what Michigan's probably hoping.
I think that's a little unfair because Portnoy from Barstool Sports, he was really big on that recruit to get him to Michigan. So
I think $10 million talk, Jerome.
Yeah.
If somebody offered me $10 million to leave this podcast tomorrow, Rome, I love you, but I'm gone. It's just the bottom line.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'd be going from no paycheck to $10 million, so I don't think we blame you on that one.
Yeah.
You can't blame me. You can't blame a guy.
Remind me to send you guys contracts so I can represent you as talent.
Okay.
It's on my checklist.
This guy trying to be one of the F1 team principals that, like, he's going to be our boss and our agent at the same time. So we're just,
that's all I want to do, really. That's actually my goal.
I think that's where he got the idea from.
Yeah, just going to negotiate against himself. He's going to be Toto Wolff representing George Russell in his negotiations with Mercedes.
All right, cool, man. So this game is the bottom 13th, but stressing me out. But yeah, we'll recap the rest of college football unless you guys have any other outstanding remarks for the coaching carousel or this past week. We're good to go.
I think we'll have more coaching carousel upcoming here. You know, Aaron's already called Florida State, a couple other teams.
It's
out
open.
There.
It's open.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they said they're going to probably fire him at the end of the season, right?
Well, I mean, it's basically between, man, they're just loading the bases here. Between now and the next 5 weeks, I think if they lose to Wake Forest, who's coming off a big win against SMU, who had never lost in the ACC regular season conference game. I think Norvell's probably gone this weekend if they lose the Wake Forest, which
interesting.
More than likely happens. I think now Florida State looks even more stupider because you've had Penn State pony up $50 million, LSU right away did, and you put out that stupid statement. If he lays another egg, I mean, we saw how bad Stanford is. I mean, Miami didn't even show up the first half and still covered a 30-point spread in that game.
Thank God.
Yeah.
thank God. I was nervous in the first half. I was like, oh, man, come on.
Well, it's a good thing I told you Miami Rome, because Michigan got backdoored late by Michigan State and did not cover. So that really helped us out.
That was the worry. Those were my two picks. Yeah. So like, all right, cool. I was fine with either one, but I did feel better about the Miami one though.
Yeah. So.
Well, that does it for bonus coverage from Source from the Sofa. Catch NBA stuff later this week. We will go over the next week in college football on Wednesday with Aaron's Games of the Week. We'll do Lions as well. And
yeah, not quite there. Warning track.
Yeah,
room.
I'm not going to lie. It looked really good coming off the bat. I'm like, oh, my God.
It did look good.
Well, the bases were loaded, and it was a deep fly, and it was caught.
I totally missed how I went from one out to two outs. I'm like,
they just intentionally walked Betts and Ohtani to load the bases.
What was it? Is it? You said the end of the 14th inning?
13th, right?
13th, yeah. But I think when they showed they don't have much left in both bullpens. I think each one has like one left, if that.
I just got a text from a friend who's a big Mariners fan. Obviously, he's a little salty. And he just said, both these teams suck.
Well, I mean, salty's pinning pretty nicely.